Today's Cloudcast is sponsored by UpCloud. Is your website running slow? Supercharge your hosting performance by deploying on the world's fastest cloud infrastructure. UpCloud offers superior cloud servers with advanced scalability, instant backup snapshots, an easy-to-use control panel, a fully featured API, and a ton of integration options and management partners. Pricing starts at only $5 a month with enough performance options to host any website or app, all backed by 24/7 live in-house support. You can get started today with a free trial using the promo code CLOUDCAST at upcloud.com/signup. That's upcloud.com/signup with promo code CLOUDCAST and receive an extra $50 to get going. So remember, that's upcloud.com/signup, promo code CLOUDCAST.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome back to the Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hope everybody had a good new year. We are kicking off the very first show of 2020, the first show of the decade. Excited to be kicking off our 10th year of doing the Cloudcast. Thank you to everybody who's listened to the show over the years, and welcome to everybody who is fairly new to the show. Usually what we do here at the beginning of the show is we do Cloud News of the Week, and as most companies have been on break or things have been slow in the tech industry, we're going to use the Cloud News of the Week segment to just talk about a couple of basic housekeeping things for the show for anybody who's new and just to kind of set the tone for the first month or so of the year. Aaron and I will both be doing a number of the shows, as we mentioned, and some of the wrap-up shows. Not both of us are on every show, but we will always be at least one of us. We're going to kick off the first few shows this year, similar to what we did last year, not so much in just pure content, but in some shows that focus on some really big topics that we think are important in the year, and we want to really sit down with some experts and dig into just some things to think about as we go into the year. So you're going to see us digging into data, into security, into SaaS services, and into a number of things that are going to be kind of big topics throughout the year that get woven throughout the year. So you'll see a number of shows here in January that are sort of the look ahead for 2020 in a given topic. So look forward to that for the next three, four, five shows or so. We're going to have a few other interesting guests woven in there, and then we'll obviously weave in new guests throughout the year. Second thing, just kind of housekeeping, we are about a month away from the Krispy Kreme Challenge. So thank you to everybody so far who has made a donation. Again, this is our once a year annual request to our community to help us try and make a difference. It happens to be here in the local North Carolina community. It's for the North Carolina Children's Hospital. Everything goes towards those children. These are kids that have some very rare disease, have some very tough situations, are often in the hospital for a long period of time. So if you are able to make a donation, to give anything, it is greatly appreciated. You can go to thecloudcast.net, which is our homepage. Up in the top right corner, you will see a link for the Krispy Kreme Challenge. That is the fun run that we do as part of this. This is going to run until about the 1st of February. So you hear this from us for a couple of times. Really appreciate anybody who can make a donation. And we are about 50 or 60% of our goal for the year. So looking forward to trying to make a difference for those kids and their family. So with that, we're going to kind of wrap up Cloud News of the Week. Typically in this slot, we would have some news, what's going on, and we will continue to get back to that as the news calendar kind of ramps up for technology and the industry. But with that, we're going to wrap it up. The interview we're doing is going to be about data. We get a chance to talk to a very good friend of the show, a longtime friend of the show, actually a gentleman who helped us get into podcasting, Greg Nierman, who we're going to talk about data. We're going to talk about what data means. We're going to talk about it from a business perspective, from a technology perspective, some of the trends that Greg's been following. Greg is somebody who we've known for a long time and has been really kind of looking at how data is used, how data is important to the business. And we think we're really going to enjoy that interview. So with that, let's go ahead and get to our discussion with Greg Nierman. Today's show is sponsored by MongoDB. As a programmer, you think in objects. With MongoDB, so does your database. MongoDB is the most popular document database built for modern application developers and the cloud era. Millions of developers use MongoDB today to power the world's most innovative products and services, from cryptocurrency to online gaming, IoT, and much more. Try MongoDB today with Atlas, the global cloud database service that runs on AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud. Configure, deploy, and connect to your database in just a few minutes. Check it out today at mongodb.com/atlas. That's mongodb.com/atlas. Today's Cloudcast is sponsored by Datadog, a cloud-scale monitoring service that provides comprehensive visibility into cloud, hybrid, and multi-cloud environments with over 350 integrations. Datadog unifies your metrics, logs, and distributed request traces in one platform so that you can investigate and troubleshoot issues across every layer of your stack. Use Datadog's rich, customizable dashboards and algorithmic alerts to ensure redundancy across multi-cloud deployments and monitor cloud migrations in real time. Try Datadog for yourself with a free trial and you'll receive a complimentary t-shirt. That 14-day trial can be found just by going to datadog.com/cloudcast. That's datadog.com/cloudcast.
And we're back. Aaron, you know, we're going to start this year off with a topic that I know is sort of near and dear to your heart, and maybe we don't give enough love to on the show, but we're going to talk about data. We're going to really kind of dig into data, not maybe just about the ones and zeros, but kind of the impacts of kind of what's changing in data. So very, very excited to kind of dive into your topic, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's been something I've been covering and passionate about for a while. And we're bringing back a friend of the show. And actually, I've told him before, but the, you know, kind of the podfather in our industry here, Greg Nierman, Director of Technology Evangelism and Influencer Relations at NetApp. That's kind of the title. But Greg, why don't you kick us off with a quick introduction? As well,
that's great. I don't know if Podfather is appropriate or not. I mean, I guess I'll.
Well, for,
I guess
us,
I'll take it, but I stumbled into it.
You stumbled into it, but you taught a bunch of others, including us. This show would not be here if it was not for you. Just so you know.
Well, I think the motivation is if Nierman can do this, we can do this twice as good, and you guys have.
Yeah. So we've known you, Greg. We've known you for a long time. You have, you know, kind of all the people that we really kind of riff with a lot, you've always been really focused on kind of this intersection between you know, data and all the stuff that sort of circles data, but also kind of the impact it has on business. You know, just kind of give folks a little bit of background on some of the things you've done from, you know, the world in storage, the stuff you were doing with sort of AI and ML, some of the things you do with, you know, other podcasts, newsletters, kind of just give folks a sense of kind of the breadth of stuff that keeps you curious and interested.
Sure. Well, you know, for years I worked for Hitachi Data Systems, which became Hitachi Vantara. Just 14 months ago, I joined NetApp as chief technologist, and my role has kind of evolved since I've been with NetApp. But as part of an offshoot of that, we developed a podcast called Go Your Way that Phoebe Go and I do. And it's kind of interesting because it's not really a vendor podcast, although it is kind of promoted and sponsored by NetApp. We don't really talk about NetApp that much. We're talking about trends in the industry and whether it's talking with our friends at AWS or Brian, you've been on it, and Aaron, you've been on it. We kind of explore where the kind of the edge of the next things are going, having debates about serverless versus containers, for example. So that's been an interesting part of my role, and I really love that piece of it. But in addition to that, I have a newsletter that I put out periodically. Right now it's on hiatus, and that's at Enterprise Tech with a .ch. Also have done quite a bit of work earlier in the year with NetApp around AI and machine learning and trying to peel back what the value of data is inside of these AI and ML models and how we can best leverage them to get good practical business results out of them. So it's been a really exciting adventure, but the common denominator across all of this is data. And that's what's really exciting to me because this is a space that's constantly evolving.
Yeah. So let's start there then. Let's kind of have maybe an executive level discussion, if you will, about data. So everyone loves talking about developers and applications, but how do you explain to an executive about the value of data and managing data as a core business asset? You know, what makes data so valuable here coming into 2020?
It's interesting. I think at the executive level, that conversation is a pretty short conversation because I think most executives understand the value, the potential value of the data. The bridge is we've got all this data, we've got all this experience, we've got all this knowledge under our umbrella. How do we leverage it to create definable business outcomes? And I think that's where the interesting conversations start. I had a recent conversation with a financial services organization that is mostly on-premises technology, that they are essentially a cloud themselves on-premises, but they're leveraging other public clouds in the process of there. And that's where the interesting conversations come out about where's the value for hybrid cloud, where's the value for multi-cloud, how do they best leverage it? It really comes down to more of the data management side of it than it is about the actual data storage and how they're retaining their data. Because there's so, especially with GDPR and other regulations that are in place, that data management piece of it just naturally gravitates to the top of the conversation.
Yeah. Do you find over the last couple of years the kind of understanding level has changed, or the conversations changed, right? Like lots of executives are like, well, you know, I like to populate a dashboard that I get daily, you know, kind of gives me some data on the business or some stats. But do they kind of get the, you know, is it changed? Do they understand sort of the value of collecting kind of context around, you know, how they do business, whether it's like interaction with customers, you know, kind of their supply chain, and the kind of the richer sense that you get around data, the more things that may unlock it? Or they still sort of look at it as just, hey, we collect a lot of data. It's great for my dashboards. I get to see a kind of a daily snapshot of what's going on.
Well, I think the bridge is how they connect the value of that data to what is driving revenue for that organization or profits for that organization. You know, we've always talked about, you know, there's three things that are driving these decisions. It's either to save money, to make money, or to stay out of jail. And so that as the premise, that's kind of how the executives look at it. And so the bridge isn't about the specifics on how you leverage the data. There's people, you know, probably below that executive level that are doing that for most organizations. At the executive level, it's about make this really crystal clear for me of how this is going to help me drive revenue or save revenue. And they want to be really specific and particular about that.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it also reminds me of a trend, if you will, right? Because yeah, I think that, you know, when we actually probably back when we started this podcast and kind of our end of year and end of decade wrap up shows, talked about this a good bit of the world used to be, you know, big servers, big relational database, big storage array. And now you take that model and you blow it up. And now you're talking, you know, hundreds to thousands of distributed elements and lots of different technology choices and some of it on-prem and some of it, you know, out in the cloud. And, you know, is there a way to really think about data, and do you think about it differently in these kind of distributed models versus the old way?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting. I think with the distributed model, the challenges are become more logistic. And if you look at some of the announcements that Amazon and others have made, you know, they're trying to get closer to the data center. They're trying to cut out any sort of latency. They want the connectivity between their data points to be as fast as possible. And I think one of the really interesting things that are evolving here, and I know you guys have probably seen a little bit about this, is the evolution. And this is like Amazon, Apple, and others are looking to simplify those logistics of data management and moving data around and how this impacts applications and cloud services and other things. You know, Amazon announced Sidewalk back in September, which is, if you think about it, it's a network for the connection of everything. And to me, this is a really, really interesting space because I think it's going to impact the enterprise and it's going to impact application developers and it's going to impact cloud services, where you've got access to data so quickly and so precisely from a data locality perspective that now it opens up new opportunities for, especially for application development. I think about, if you think the evolution from 3G to 4G with our mobile devices, applications like Uber and Lyft probably would not have been possible with 3G. Imagine what happens as the adoption of 5G or these unlicensed spectrum that Amazon Sidewalk and others are developing, what that's going to do for application development. And that's when you can, your eyes kind of open up about the opportunities that are out there as big companies are solving these logistics problems of moving data.
It's interesting. You're sort of, and we'll put some stuff in the show notes because there's, you pointed out to us some interesting examples. Like you said, you've got some of these big companies that in essence are trying to disintermediate, you know, your traditional telco, the folks that are, you know, your wireline providers, even your wireless providers. And it does become kind of interesting because if you connect the dots, you go, okay, number one, you know, the big cloud providers have never really discounted the price of networking, right? Inbound and outbound networking. They've never done that, right? Storage prices have come down. They never discount the price of networking. They're making investments to get into it. And then you think about, like, even just weird, what seem like anomalies, like, you know, Amazon last year or AWS last year announced, hey, we're doing this managed like satellite base station service. And then you go, oh, hold on a second. They're always their first, you know, kind of, they're always their first customer for stuff. And then you see them, you know, talking about, hey, maybe we'll get into the satellite or managed drone business. And then you watch these other ones and you go, like, I start to connect these dots and I go, is the price of storing data going to become completely irrelevant, but the price of moving data becomes the thing that everybody has to think about, because the networking cost is everything at that point, and the storing of it could essentially kind of go down to zero.
Well, hasn't networking always been like that big boulder from a cost perspective? And I think as these technologies evolve, they're still trying to where the cost of compute, the cost of storage has come down. That networking element is the thing that, and the what I call data logistics, are the thing that to me is the biggest barrier to innovation for companies of all sizes. And I think by tackling this problem, by looking at low orbit satellites and like this unlicensed spectrum that connects everything, Amazon's going to be its own customer for this technology, the sidewalk technology that they're developing. Apple is looking at this technology because it gives them an opportunity. I don't know if the angle is to get around 5G or to actually own the network itself. Regardless of their motivations, they're looking at alternatives to the status quo of how data is being managed and used.
Yeah, and if I could add something else to that too, it's this combination of, you know, another emerging trend is where the data is processed, right? Like how much data is collected locally and maybe processed locally, and then the key components of that are maybe long hauled back, and those are some of the alternatives or workarounds today in your model, right? Of like in the move from 3G to 4G to 5G, right? If you're bandwidth constrained. Then you only backhaul back what is necessary and you process some other things locally. And it kind of moves on to this topic of, you know, data at times has almost been a liability, if you will, right?
It's something
that, you know, you have to pay for it and you have to pay to protect it, right? But now we're moving into this world where it's an asset. We start talking about data lakes. We start talking about AI and ML models. And, have you found any metrics or had any conversations that people understand, you know, kind of in an analytics context, about how we justify keeping data or acquiring even more data because it becomes more valuable?
Well, I think it's interesting because different companies have different priorities when it comes to data. Take, for example, law firms. I know there's law firms that try to keep their retained data to less than 60 days. And the purpose being is that sometimes that data can be a liability from the lawsuits and other perspectives. So they want to make sure that that data does not become a liability. Now, I think it's kind of draconian to say we're only going to keep the last 60 days of emails and other things. But that's how some companies look at it. There are other companies, if you think about the oil and gas industry as a great example, where they've got decades of data, seismic data from the research that they're doing for these oil wells and other repositories around the globe. That's data that's been sitting dormant for the most part for the last two decades. But that data doesn't become irrelevant over time. So they're going back through there and finding new ways and leveraging machine learning tools and other things to re-explore, re-leverage that data. And that saves them significant amount of money. If you think about what it costs for oil and gas exploration, as an example, this is an opportunity for them to leverage the data they already have from what they've invested without having to create more investment in exploration. So it just depends on your business and the model. And you can apply that to financial services to a lot of different industries.
Yeah, I think the other spinoff of that I've heard a couple of times, and you mentioned oil and gas, is you're starting to see these companies that used to retain a bunch of the data, or, you know, used to sort of have some advantage over it, but certain advantages obviously go away over time, is they're starting to look at spinning out sort of SaaS services that they can offer to, you know, even other people in their industry, or, you know, people that are sort of adjacent to their industry.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, it is the thing of saying, like, if I keep thinking of data the exact same way, then yeah, it becomes a relic or an artifact. But if I start thinking about it as, you know, would this be beneficial to other people? Could we monetize it in different ways? It does sort of open up some doors that you probably never would have thought of in the past. And then you go, okay, you know, how would we go about doing that?
That's absolutely right. But I still go back to the network, right? As far as, you know, how do you capitalize, leverage this? Where's the opportunity as we think about how enterprises are going to evolve their data strategies? So much of this revolves, it's not just about the retention, that, you know, the policies, the regulations that for that data, you know, the connectivity and the access and the low latency to that data is a critical element to it.
I want to kind of explore a little bit of, like you said, some of the, you know, we went from 3G to 4G. We're going to move to 5G, assuming, you know, it takes off. How do you get a chance to talk to a lot of different people? You know, when you have sort of the unknown of, like, what would, you know, sort of unlimited bandwidth, you know, faster processors, you know, closer to, like, have you found anybody that's started to have kind of a good framework to think about what's possible? You know, I mean, like, none of us would have thought about, oh, like, Uber's going to happen when the iPhone came out, but it did unlock the possibility. Do you find, you know, you found anybody who's like, hey, this is the way I'm starting to think about it, that's interesting yet?
Well, yeah, especially if you look at financial services as a good example of that. Latency is a killer for financial services. And so if data locality does not become an issue, and you can be more responsive to your customers, if you think about fraud detection and other things, some of the simple things that we take for granted today, and how that evolves when you don't have to worry about the network and the costs associated with that network. And keep in mind, I think the movement to this unlicensed spectrum that Amazon and others are working on, it's to remove the cost, the data logistics cost, out of that. And so they can get better results, faster results. So I think financial services are probably going to be one of the early adopters of these technologies. But, you know, Amazon themselves are going to be their own biggest customer. If you think about what they do with the Whole Foods, with their trucks, with, you know, not just the delivery services, but the whole logistics element that relies on data, Amazon, first and foremost, is going to become their own biggest customer. But now think about that they can extend that out to the connectivity of everything. What if my phone now doesn't need a 5G network? I can communicate for a lower cost, lower power from my phone that doesn't rely on the traditional telcos. Now, it all of a sudden, this environment becomes a lot more competitive, and it just changes the whole landscape for data logistics. I feel like I'm pounding on this drum here, but to me, this is one of those very disruptive technologies that, if you know, the Apple announcement about what they're doing with potentially with satellites that appeared in Bloomberg, if you look at that, the purpose of why they're doing that and how they're driving it in the window, they're talking about within 5 years of making this a reality. So it doesn't skip 5G, but I think people are looking past 5G for what's next and how are we going to manage our data in the next generation of devices.
I want to ask you one other thing. You brought up kind of early when we were talking. You said, you know, it's can I make money? Can I save money? Can I stay out of jail? What are some of these sort of things that you know, may end up putting somebody in jail? Like, are there new standards that people have to comply to? I only ask that question because, you know, we've sort of reached a numbness to, you know, new attack happens, new breach happens, lots of credit cards get out there, you know, hubbub in the newspaper, lawsuit, you know, a year from now. But are people actually going to jail? Do they worry about it that way? Or, I mean, is it just like, well, we shouldn't do that, but yeah, there never are any ramifications of it?
Well, jail probably is the extreme word to use there, but there's certainly going to be financial consequences. If you look at California's new data privacy law as an example of that, you know, that could very well be the blueprint for a national data privacy law. And in that case, it by de facto, it probably will be the national standard because of all the companies that do business in California. I kind of, as an offshoot here, I kind of liken it to some of the fuel standards that came out of the 70s that California had developed. And oil companies and other gas providers kind of reformulated their gasoline to meet that standard. So as an extension of California passing a law, it had broad implications across the U.S. I think the same thing is true for the data privacy law that California is implementing. It will be by de facto a data privacy standard, probably will be adopted nationally. But there are strict financial consequences, very clear disclosure pieces of that law that change the way that enterprises think about data management and think of it as a U.S.-based GDPR and the implications of how we're managing data in the U.S. I don't think your executives are going to go to jail, but if there's a significant impact to their bottom line, it goes back to those first two principles of making money or saving money, it will absolutely be an implication that they have to consider now and being able to identify where that data is and how it's being leveraged at any point in time.
Yeah. And if I could add an additional point to that, Greg, it's a talk track I think I've used on the podcast before, but I know I've used it with a lot of customers and you know, compliance in general, you know, kind of has it. Everyone thinks about compliance as you know, storing data in a certain way, but there's also the flip side to it of, you know, there is compliance to not store data, right? To almost combine a little bit of that, you know, the lawyers and the 60 days kinds of thing of, you know, copies of data, like removing Greg from our database, right, is pretty easy, right? But copies of data, right? What if it gets, say, you know, the offsite backup? And then what about, you know, in the test dev copies and all of these other things that, you know, internally, how do we know that, you know, Greg got removed from the 10 different copies internally in the system? So, you know, the primary copy is pretty easy. I think compliance becomes a rat hole and these privacy laws are going to become a rat hole when it comes to how do you know that I've been removed from your system completely and can prove that
I would argue that it doesn't have to be, right? If you've got a good data, metadata applications that are looking at that, viewing at that, and have that level of awareness that throughout all the copies that you have, where they're located, what that data tells you, I think it becomes much easier. And I don't want to go patting the NetApp back here, but if you look at some of the technologies that NetApp's been bringing to market that leverages that metadata to know exactly what data lives where, I think that management becomes easier. I don't think that's an excuse for not being able to provide the level of service that these new laws are going to force you to.
No, and I think that's a trend for 2020 and beyond is metadata management becomes just as important as data management.
It does. It's going to be critically important, but I think it's something that we've kind of taken for granted. And I think the scenario you pointed out is like, okay, so you've got backups, you've got, you know, we talked about distributed data before. It is a real challenge, but the technology is there to manage that. It's just a matter of adopting it and applying it.
Agreed.
Last thing to wrap it up, since you're kicking off the new year for us on the show, as you think about the year, what sort of big, you know, kind of maybe professional goal, personal goal, do you, you know, one or two that you may have looking at 2020 and something that you're excited about?
Well, it's interesting. Last year, I got certified on Google Cloud Platform, and I think I want to, from a personal level, extend that out to AWS and Azure if I can find the time to do that. But it's a personal mission of mine. I don't think you can talk intelligently about these platforms until you fully dive into them and leverage them. So that's kind of a personal mission I have, is to have more than a basic understanding of a lot of these technologies.
Yeah. Aaron, I feel like Greg is almost teeing us up for what we're doing with the basic stuff. We're going to have a bunch of this stuff for you coming out here. So
really?
Yeah.
How much is it going to cost me?
No. We're spinning off a new podcast. We're going to do a lot of basic stuff. So you will have to be one of the first listeners for it. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Very, very, very cool. Well, listen, Greg, what's the best place for folks to find you? I know we'll put some things in the show notes, but if folks want to dig into some of the data discussions, some of the future discussions, what's the best place to pick your brain and talk to you about this stuff?
Well, if you can manage to spell my last name, it would be Twitter. And my Twitter handle is @Nierman, KNIERIEMEN. And that's where I do at least a lot of public conversations and a lot of private conversations and DMs as I'm trying to peel back or learn more about these technologies.
Very good. Very good. Aaron, you want to wrap us up and take us home?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as we move into the new year again, thank you to everyone for listening. If you do have a moment, we would love a review out on, iTunes, Google Play, all of the various platforms. Tell a friend. And as always, thanks for listening. And if you do have a moment, we are in the middle of our kind of annual drive, if you will, for supporting the North Carolina Children's Hospital. We have the Krispy Kreme race coming up before too much longer. I don't know if Brian's been training or not, but I've been managed to get out and get a couple runs in here recently. But just go to thecloudcast.net, and the upper right-hand corner of our webpage has a link for the donations for that. And all of the money there goes to North Carolina Children's Hospital.
And someday, Aaron and Brian, I want to join you on that run.
Come on out.
The challenge of eating Krispy Kreme donuts and running, how many miles is it each way?
Five. It's a two and a half out, two and a half back.
Yeah. I can't imagine what that does to your stomach after eating Krispy Kreme donuts, but I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Yeah. Plus the weather's better than Ohio. So come on down.
Yes. For sure.
All right. With that, we're going to wrap it up, folks. Thank you. And we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.